Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up at the buzzer. Banks it in! Ha-ha! He banks in the three! And the Lakers win the game!
Well, that is one of, you know, thousands of career highlights Kobe Bryant had with the Los Angeles Lakers. And you'll read about none of that in the book, The Rise, Kobe Bryant and the Pursuit of Immortality by Mike Sielski, because Mike took the different angle, which is the origins of Kobe and how he got to be that guy. Mike joins us now. Mike, I told you the other day, I'm slow reading your book the way one would savor a great meal. And I really limit myself to, like, whatever, one chapter, 25, 30 pages a day. I'm up to his junior year at Lower Merion, and I'm enjoying the hell out of it. You've done a great job.
Glenn, I really appreciate that. Thank you so much for saying that. It is awesome, as always, to be with both of you guys this morning. Thanks.
The book is called The Rise of Kobe Bryant and the Pursuit of Immortality, and Mike's got a very wisely put out a podcast companion to it called I Am Kobe, which you can find wherever you find your podcast. Before we get into that, and we will, let's kind of get the pulse of the other teams now. We'll start with the Sixers, because you're a very good hoops guy. They're doing okay without Ben Simmons. They blow a lead the other night, and Doc Rivers gets very prickly with the media afterward. I guess this is leading to a very general question, which is, do you agree with us that the Sixers are kind of in this limbo now, where Joel Embiid is having this great season, but we know that if they don't make a trade and get something for Ben Simmons, the ceiling is kind of, they're going to bump up against it?
Yeah, I absolutely agree, Glenn. And I think it's been interesting how a little bit of the tenor of the discussion around the team has shifted over time. And I have to be honest, I anticipated this happening, which is that initially it's like, okay, Sixers, stick it to Ben Simmons. He wants to sit, you let him sit, and that's great. Well, the Sixers' goal
you overheard me talking to my wife one time, didn't you?
But the Sixers' goal isn't to get satisfaction from themselves or their fans by giving Ben Simmons his comeuppance. Their goal is to win basketball games and win a championship. And you have a player in Embiid who is capable of delivering that. And one of the things that I thought got overlooked in Daryl Morey's interview last week, where he talked about the Simmons situation in depth, was this cockamamie logic he used to justify, you know, lowering his trade demands for Simmons. Well, Joel is playing so well that we feel more comfortable taking, you know, less for, basically saying we feel more comfortable taking less for Ben in a trade. Baloney. Like, nobody's going to give you what you wanted for Ben. You've been trying to long play this for a while. I kind of sort of understand that, but that was always fraught with risk because, for example, a potential trade target like Damian Lillard might get injured and suddenly not become a potential trade target. And to me, if I'm Doc Rivers, and I'm not excusing the way he acted the other night after that game, but I'd be looking at this and saying, you know, we're in sixth place in the East. We could get better if we traded Ben Simmons for, I don't know, something. Like, I'm not suggesting you take a penny for a player who's worth a dollar, but you might have to take 75 cents, because that 75 cents is better than not doing anything.
Yeah, I think most people would probably agree with you on that, Mike. Now, the conversation this week has expanded to the idea of, okay, let's make, instead of just trading Simmons one-on-one or for whatever, expanding it and making it maybe a triangular deal, three teams involved, or throwing Tobias Harris in or Thybul or something like that, expanding the package to include a guy like Harris, and then but now you're talking about a real restructuring of the team at this point. I don't know. How do you feel about that possibility?
I don't feel real great about it, Ray. I mean, they tried that a couple of years ago, right, when they traded for Harris and they traded for Jimmy Butler. And they basically said that we can out-talent everybody, and we don't have to have depth, and we don't have to have a whole lot of time to build cohesion within the guys who are going to be our starters. And their starting lineup that season was as good as anybody's. And they still couldn't get it done. I mean, they came close, and conceivably if Kawhi Leonard's shot in Game 7 doesn't go in, maybe they end up in the finals and maybe they win a championship, but that didn't happen. And it would seem to me you're probably going to end up doing something like that again if you make these kind of moves. And again, that doesn't mean that Tobias Harris is necessarily worth a max contract or has been performing to meet his contract or anything like that. But, Maury's talking an awful lot about, you know, the maintenance of competitiveness over time. And, I'm sorry. Like, that was what the whole process was based on, was building to become competitive and in Joel Embiid's prime. Well, Joel Embiid is in his prime. He probably could be or should be the MVP this season. It seems to me you got to strike now, especially given the shape that the rest of the Eastern Conference is in. And if you get anything of value for Ben Simmons, relatively speaking, you should make that move and move on from him, because they literally cannot improve themselves until they trade Simmons.
Mike Sielski is our guest. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Sielski, S-I-E-L-S-K-I. And Mike is somebody who closely follows the Flyers. Ray and I rant about the Flyers on a regular basis. We're disgusted with where this organization is, how irrelevant it has become. We suggested yesterday they're the Pittsburgh Pirates of hockey now. Mike, what's the pathway to improvement with this team? Because I don't think firing another coach is going to do it.
Well, it depends on what kind of improvement you want, Glenn. If you want like a sugar rush, you know, you could try to make some trades. You can trade Claude Giroux and, do those kind of things that the Flyers have been doing for a long time that they did last offseason. Or you can reconcile yourself to the fact, and, you know, I keep banging this drum and I'm going to keep banging it. This team has not drafted well for close to two decades. And when you do that, you end up in a kind of vicious cycle that this franchise has been in, which is, you know, you rely on guys who you take high in the draft and they turn out not to pan out. And then you have to patch holes by signing veteran players like, I don't know, Derek Brassard, Keith Yandel, you know, run down the list of guys they brought in this offseason. And the cycle just repeats itself. They have not drafted well, going back to Paul Holmgren, going back to Ron Hextall, really going back, you know, including Chuck Fletcher in there. And, you know, you can justify all those decisions and picks in the moment that you want, but the fact is it hasn't worked out. And it's going to take a long time to recover from how poorly they have replenished their talent pool for so long.
You know, Glenn and I were talking about this yesterday, and he asked me, because I was an original Flyer season ticket holder. I mean, when they came to life in 67-68, I was a senior in college. Loved the idea that the NHL was coming to Philadelphia. Couldn't wait to go down there for that first night when they played the Pittsburgh Penguins. So I've seen them from I have seen them from literally day one to now. And Glenn asked me yesterday, do I think that this is the nadir? Do I think this is the lowest that the franchise has ever been? And it wasn't a knee-jerk reaction. I mean, I thought about it. And Mike, I said yes. I mean, they've had some bad years, and you know, some of the early years of an expansion. You know, it took a while to build the team. It took a while to build the Bullies, and they went through some tough times. And then you know, they had before Lindros, they had a couple bad years too, but not like this. I mean, not like this. I mean, I really, after giving it some thought, I think that this, my experience with the franchise was, again, goes back to the first year. I think it's never been worse than it is right now.
I'm inclined to agree with you, Ray. I mean, if you think back to the early 90s when they missed the playoffs the 5 years in a row, You know, at least they were coming off of recent success, right? They had gone to the finals in 85 and 87. They had gotten to the conference finals in kind of a surprise run in 89. And within that five-year run of missing the playoffs, they made the Lindros deal. So at least there was hope that you had, you know, the next great player in the NHL.
Right.
There's none of that now. You're 100% right. There really isn't that sense of hope. There's no sense of, okay, well, at least we have this. I mean, the ultimate irony of this, if you think about it, is that, you know, Carter Hart has played better this season than he did play than he played last season. They actually have the goalie,
right?
And yet they don't have anything else around them. All these years that they were searching for the goaltender, and now it looks like they have it, and they don't have anything else.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a shame, but you know, I mean, believe me, I was one of the people banging the drum in 2013 for culture change. But the bottom line is, you know, you can have a different approach, but it still comes down to you have to find talent. And
yeah,
they are not finding it.
All right, let's talk about your book, because as I said, it's terrific. It just hit the market, whatever, within the last week or so. The Rise, Kobe Bryant, The Pursuit of Immortality. And what it's about is Kobe's early years from his birth. Actually starts by talking about his dad in the league up through. And I guess my initial question is, what was your inspiration for this? Why did you decide to write this?
Well, after he died in January of 2020, I wrote, half dozen to a dozen columns about him in the aftermath of his passing. And I thought, you know, the story of Kobe connected to Philadelphia, whether at Lower Merion High School, whether through his dad, Joe, and his, you know, ties to the city, was one that the Philadelphia region knew pretty well, but that the rest of the country and even the rest of the world didn't know that well. And that was kind of the intellectual hurdle I had to get over in writing the book, was feeling like, well, everybody knows this story. And then reminding myself that Philadelphia can be so parochial that, yeah, that story of Kobe's early life is probably really well known here, but probably not elsewhere. And so I also felt like that's the story that I can tell about Kobe. And so I was tight with a couple of people who were close to him when he was young, and I asked them to come on board with the project, and they agreed to cooperate. And once that happened, I was kind of rolling, and I figured that my goal in doing it was, if I tell this story the right way, the first 17, 18 years of his life, then somebody will be able to pick it up a year from now, 5 years from now, 10, and be able to say, okay, I understand Kobe Bryant as a figure and as a man based on reading what he was like as a teenager.
One of the things that strikes me from the very beginning, you know, the earliest recollections, is he had this drive that from the start, he's sitting around watching videos of Michael Jordan, and he wants to be the greatest player. And he's telling people, he's whatever, 12, 13 years old, that he's going to be the greatest player. And, I mean, you really did a great job of kind of talking to enough people about his motivation that it becomes clear that he willed himself to be this guy.
Yeah, you know, there were aspects of that, of his journey in that regard, that really surprised me, kind of, I don't know if impressed me is the right word. Like this is one of my favorite anecdotes in the book. He had a friend who, the two of them would go around to playgrounds in and around the city, and they would play basketball together. But it was a unique kind of playing basketball. The friend had two jobs. He would rebound for Kobe, all of Kobe's shots, and then he would yell at Kobe.
Yeah.
You go to a suburban school, you're soft. You go to a white school. You couldn't play in the public league. And Kobe wanted him to do that because Kobe, A, was already hearing those kinds of things, B, knew he was going to continue hearing those kinds of things in high school, and C, was so convinced that he was going to be an NBA star that he wanted to kind of gird himself for the trash talk that was ahead when he became a pro. And, at 14 or 15, I certainly wasn't thinking that way in terms of my career or anything else. But you know, one of the people I talked to in the book, Sonny Vaccaro, the sneaker mogul, said Kobe was always one step ahead. And when it came to basketball, he absolutely was.
Yeah, I thought that the recruitment of him when he was at Lower Merion, and people were becoming aware of who he was, and now the colleges were all coming to talk to him. And there seemed to be the assumption, most people kind of assume, well, if he goes to college, he's going to go to LaSalle to play where his father's coaching. And you cite the incident where Jonathan Haynes, who was the point guard from Villanova, goes out to see him, and he's playing at Villanova, and Villanova's now in the bidding to try and get Kobe. And Haynes says, you know, what, are you kidding me? This guy's not going to LaSalle or Villanova. This guy's going straight to the NBA. Just the first time he saw him play, he thought that his game was such that he was going to be able to make that jump and make it without any problem at all.
Yeah, and Ray, as somebody who was an undergraduate at LaSalle in the early to mid-1990s, believe me, those rumors and that hope was all over campus and all over the Big Five that, oh my gosh, what if he comes to play for Joe? It would be, you know, a renaissance of the program, et cetera, et cetera. And Kobe actually thought about it when he was a sophomore and into his junior year at Lower Merion. But, you know, that summer of 1995 where he's scrimmaging against NBA players and going toe-to-toe with Jerry Stackhouse and Rick Mahorn and Sean Bradley, that's the turning point. That really persuades him and convinces him, you know what, I really don't need to go to college. You know, by then he's bigger than LaSalle, but he's not going to go to Duke or Carolina or Kentucky or anything like that. He's got his eyes set on the NBA, and he doesn't tell anybody outside of his close circle of friends. One of the most surprising things I found out in researching the book was that he never told Greg Downer, his high school coach at Lower Merion, what his decision was. I mean, Downer suspected, but Kobe never came right out and told him. I mean, that's how secretive he kind of was. That's how much he liked kind of, you know, laughing at the speculation about what his decision was going to be.
Mike Sielski is the author. The book is The Rise, Kobe Bryant and the Pursuit of Immortality. One more thing about the book that I'm finding very interesting. I was not here when his dad played for the Sixers. Ray, of course, remembers Jelly Bean Bryant, who comes across as a very flashy, fun player in some ways before his time because he's a 6'9" guy who wants to freelance and they want to put him in the low post. But it sounds like Kobe had this motivation to almost clean the family name. I'm probably not putting it the best way, but saw how his father was regarded and really had that as part of his motivation toward excellence.
Yeah, you're 100% right about that, Glenn. I had multiple people tell me about that, you know, Joe felt like he kind of got a raw deal in the NBA because, as you said, he's 6'9". He could handle the ball. He could shoot. He could do all these things. He was, you know, one of those guys who was Magic Johnson before Magic Johnson came around, and he didn't feel like he got the shot that he deserved. Now, some of that was on Joe, who was kind of a flake, kind of a ne'er-do-well, you know, would show up, miss the team bus to practice and things like that. But he was pretty bitter about the fact that he had to go to Europe to kind of, you know, become the player he felt he always should have been in the United States. And Kobe heard that a lot growing up. And he definitely felt like, you know what, I'm going to succeed in basketball to reclaim the Bryant name in the sport so that when people think of Kobe Bryant, they're going to think of Joe Bryant and they're going to think of two great players, not just one. And that absolutely was a motivation to Kobe, you know, early on. That's how close he and his father were.
Yeah. So it's a great book and you can get it in bookstores. I'm sure you can order online, but Ray, I got a better idea for people.
What would that be?
Well, this Thursday night, Mike Sielski is going to be selling and signing copies of this new book, The Rise, Kobe Bryant. And Ray Didinger is going to be signing and selling copies of his book or books.
Actually, I'll be bringing some copies of Eagles Encyclopedia as well.
Sweet. and it's going to be a charity event that we are hosting Thursday night, 6 to 9 p.m. at the Puddler's Kitchen by Conchock and Brewing, 3 DeKalb Street in Bridgeport. It's right over the bridge from Norristown. It is a charity event to help a longtime friend of mine who was paralyzed in a bicycling accident. He's quadriplegic, so the cost of medical care and home care and everything is staggering. $15 gets you in. You can buy Mike Sielski's book. Mike, you'll sign it for him, right?
Well, Glenn, I've told you this before. My favorite beer, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on the radio with you or we're friends.
Speak at length.
Is the Ring the Bell Pilsner by Conshohocken Brewing. So I hope by the end of the night, I'm still able to sign my name. I'm just saying.
All right. Just make sure you got a ride home. but yes, we'll have plenty of that on tap there at Puddler's Kitchen Tap by Conchock and Brewing. $15 gets you in the door. First 40 people get a free copy of the book I wrote with the late great Big Daddy Graham. Bernie Parent is going to be there, Ray, and we're going to auction off tickets to go to a game with Bernie sitting in the box.
That's great.
We have all kinds of other great auction items from the Eagles, autographed jerseys. You donated an autographed bottle of Vermeil wine, autographed by, help me out,
Dick Vermeil, Harold Carmichael, and Ron Jaworski.
Pretty good.
And a wonderful bottle of Vermeil wine.
There you go. And a lot of other good items, and all to benefit a great cause. Thursday night, 6 to 9, Puddler's Kitchen and Tap on DeKalb Street in Bridgeport. And, Mike, it's really a great book. I'm sure sales are going well, and if they increase this Thursday night, all the better.
Glenn, thank you so much. Ray, thanks. I'll see you guys Thursday night. I'm looking forward to it.
Look forward to seeing you,
thank
Mike.
You so much, Mike. There you go. Good stuff.
Very good stuff.
Yeah. All right. We got to take a break. All right. Mike and George Hangin, we'll get you guys coming up. Anybody else? Good time to join. We've been yakking, so we kind of dropped a lot of our callers. 215-592-9494. Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack now on 94 WIP.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Tannehill steps forward, popped up in the air, intercepted! Logan Wilson's got it for Cincinnati with 20 seconds to play.
It was really, both games yesterday were exciting in that they came down last minute. There were not a ton of offensive highlights from the two games, Ray, certainly. But there were highlights, and there were great defenses.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to get to the calls, but I'll just ask you one question before. Too much can be made of short sample sizes in sports, right?
Yeah.
So you watched those two games yesterday, and people can say, well, you know, like, what does this mean for the Eagles? Are there any lessons that you take out of it?
Well, referencing one of the calls we got in the first hour, it sort of echoed my feeling. Is there's a sentiment, and boy, this goes all the way up the food chain at the NFL office too. Is unless it's a 38-35 game, it's not a good game. You know, unless there's a ton of scoring, it's not a good game. It's not good pro football. That low scoring games, good defense. That's not what people want to see. I disagree. Maybe I'm the exception. You know, maybe we have raised a generation of football fans that are so maddened and so video gamed that they need games of 70 and 80 point games to be entertained. I don't. I mean, to me, yesterday I was really looking forward to yesterday's games, and when they ended, I thought, man, that was a great day of football. There wasn't a ton of big plays, wasn't a ton of highlights, but there was a lot of defense and just good play, just good football. I don't need there to be 1,200 total yards in a game to be entertained. And I think that that seems to be the prevailing feeling in the league now. I mean, that the rules are certain all written that way, the way the games are broadcast, everything about everything all seems to be geared, and even the way it's coached to some degree, it all seems to be geared to open wide open offense, scoring the ball all the time and running up the point totals. And you know, to me, you can have a really, really good 17-14 game. Okay. And I think that's the kind of football you saw yesterday. So,
that was a good rant, but it didn't answer my question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's a really good rant. Are there any lessons for the Eagles? Is the lesson that the Eagles should use those first three picks on defensive players? Is that the lesson?
Okay. Yes. I was looking more bigger picture.
I know you were.
I was looking more bigger picture.
I know.
But no, you were
working your agenda, which is not a bad agenda.
Yeah, no, but to your point, is there a lesson that the Eagles could take away from it? Yeah, defense still can win in the National Football League.
Okay. Good. All right. There you go. Mike in Marlton is with us. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, guys. How are we doing today?
All right.
Hello, Mike.
So I wanted to talk about the Packers game. First off, I know it sounds weird, but I feel so bad for the Packers in the sense of, like, they have to play in that stadium, and I know people are like, oh, it's an advantage. But what other team has to, like, go through that, you know? Like, there's not
the Bills.
A whole lot of teams.
The Bills.
Yeah, but all right. Yes, I appreciate the Bills and what they do, but there's too many teams with these billion-dollar stadiums inside. I enjoy watching that nitty-gritty football and just so unpredictable. I was like, there's no way the 49ers are going to win. And just the facet of them coming back was just so great. And I'm very young, and I really enjoyed the game yesterday. But in regards to the Eagles, I wanted to talk about, could we see Aaron Rodgers coming here because he lost early? Like, even earlier than he expected?
By the way, let me clarify. I misstated something. He's not a free agent after this year. He's free agent after next year. He is not. But he said something about – he indicated he – whatever. I read you his quote, which gave that implication. So you have to trade for him. I have no interest in Aaron Rodgers, even if I don't have to give up assets, because I don't think the Eagles – I don't want a 38, 39-year-old quarterback coming in to lead this team. I don't think this team's ready to – I don't know. I want to build young.
Did you think the Buccaneers were ready to make that jump when Tom Brady went to them?
It's a fair question. It's a good question.
You know?
Yeah, I hear you. Ray, you're a little more open to it than I am, right?
Yeah, I would – if I thought he was open to the possibility of coming here, to me he looks better than – even though he's older than Russell Wilson, to me it looks like he's got more game left. I saw Russell Wilson this year. I didn't think he looked that good, to be honest with you. I really didn't. Whereas, Aaron Rodgers this year, 37 touchdowns, four interceptions. I think this is one of his best years. I don't know if he can go as long as Tom Brady, but, it's obvious to me that he can definitely still play. I just don't know. If the Eagles were a really good team, but they just needed a quarterback. You know, you felt like if we get that guy, we got everything else. Then it's a different conversation. But this team, they're not there. They're not that team yet.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
They need a lot of work on defense. They just need another receiver. There's a lot of things that they still need. And this is an opportunity with this draft that they can address a lot of that. And build themselves a pretty good team. And who knows, in the process, you may find your quarterback right here.
So there, he talked about the stadium in Lambeau Field, and it's tough to play outside in that cold weather and stuff. In Buffalo, I'm keeping up with it. They're talking about the possibility of a new stadium. They've been talking about the possibility of a new stadium there for decades, right? I mean, Ralph Wilson Stadium is an old stadium.
I remember when it was brand new.
Yeah, sure. I went to the first game ever there, preseason game against Washington.
The thing I liked about it, and I still like about it, is you walk in on street level.
Yeah, it's like a college stadium. You go down.
Yeah.
I like that, too. It's very cool. First game I ever went to there was a preseason game against Washington. And you know how you remember dumb stuff? We talked about this earlier. Opening kickoff, the Bills kicked off, and the opening kickoff in that stadium was returned for a touchdown by a guy, I may not get his name exactly right, Herbert Mulkey.
Yeah, Herb Mulkey.
Yeah.
Hyphenated.
That was it. And it's like, hey, welcome to the brand new stadium. The Bills kick off. Oh, and it's run back for a touchdown. It's like, oh, well, this is going to go well.
He was the guy that George Allen signed out of a tryout camp.
Is that right?
He had one of these, come all, try out for the Redskins.
Yeah.
And like 500 guys.
Invincible?
It was exactly like Invincible. And like 500 guys showed up. And he kept one guy, And that one guy was Herb Mulkey.
Yeah, well, he killed the Bills that day. Anyway, they're talking about building a new stadium there, and the question is, oh, should we build a dome stadium? The overwhelming majority of fans would go nuts if they built a dome stadium there. And it's cold. I mean, you see those games where it's, you know, last week against the Patriots. It's 3 degrees. They don't want a dome stadium. It's one of the things that gives it personality. It's one of the things that made, if you get a dome stadium, you're just another team.
Mm-hmm.
You're Indianapolis, right? It has no personality. It's an advantage. I would think it's a competitive advantage. And I think it is for the Packers. Not yesterday, but often, that you play in those elements.
Mm-hmm.
And they build those elements.
And they build the team accordingly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they build the team to play that way.
Yep.
And it definitely works to their advantage. I really like Buffalo. I every time, and when the Bills were on that run, when they were in the playoffs every year and going to the deep into the playoffs every year, and I knew that at some point during the season my travels were going to take me through Buffalo, yeah. I always looked forward to it.
Yeah,
because the place had a real character.
It does.
It had a real personality, which would be lost in a dome. I agree with you.
It's just a pain in the neck to drive there, but that's a different story. The worst road access of any place in the world. You think it's tough getting in and out down in South Philly?
Oh, nothing like that.
No, it's like a one-lane road for 10 miles.
It is. Well, that's why people, I mean, heck, the people come on Friday and just start parking.
They
park
do. They tailgate.
The tailgating starts on Friday afternoon.
It's the greatest. George and Malvern, you're on with Ray and Glenn.
Hey, guys, I was up there only once, and that was for, you remember, I think that's the Mike Vick-led Eagles played the Bills.
Oh, yeah.
It was right after the Phillies were eliminated.
I remember that.
Yeah, and I liked it.
I was at that game. That was the game that the Eagles lost because what's-his-name was offsides at the end.
Yep, I can't remember, but I remember that. Yeah, I thought the stadium was like a giant community pool.
Yeah.
It was like all whitewashed inside, and I don't know. I just thought it had character. But I wanted to ask you, Ray, especially. I know you sit down with your tablets and your pens and whatnot, and
right.
You have 3 months till the draft. Knowing what you know now, though, how do you rank this draft as one for the Eagles to have three first-round picks in?
I think it's really good. That's one of the reasons why I'm pretty adamant about not trading them for a quarterback. I think that this is a draft that, to me, is really good in edge rushers, and it's really good in linebackers. If they would deem to finally draft a linebacker in the first round, they're going to be there.
I see a lot of mocks taking, if the Eagles stay with their picks, I guess, the Utah linebacker.
Devin Lloyd, yeah.
Right, and you know, certainly some other ones. But, no, I mean, I'm glad to hear that because looking at it, you know, you don't know until you know. But, and I wondered if you could put the three picks on last year's draft just as an example of another draft. Would that have been a good time to have 15, 16, and 19?
There's never a bad time to have three first-round draft picks. I mean, you can always find some. If you're drafting, if you got three picks in the first round, you can always find players. But what you're saying is it a good match for a year when you have specific needs in a certain area and this draft matches those picks? And this is one of them. I said last year was a good draft for the Eagles because I felt they really needed a wide receiver, and there were really good wide receivers, and they got one. This year, it's pretty obvious to anybody that's watched them that they need help on defense. They need a couple defensive linemen. They desperately need an edge rusher. And, you know, I know their history with linebackers, but it's clear they need linebackers. I mean, the linebackers they've got now are special team players. I mean, they're not linebackers. They are not difference-making players. And those guys are in this draft in abundance.
The game he was talking about, the time he went up to Buffalo, Eagles, Bills, I was at that. I was visiting my parents. It was October 2011. It is right when it was like the day after the Phillies get eliminated by the Cardinals. Remember that?
Oh,
horrible game. And I'm looking it up. I'm looking up the box score now. The Bills won 31-24. It was Mike Vick versus Ryan Fitzpatrick was playing for
Fitzpatrick had a big day.
Yeah, he had a big day. Jason Avant, 9 catches for 100-something yards for the Eagles. But the Eagles need to stop Buffalo,
right?
It's like 3rd and 4, and if they stop them, they're going to get the ball back one last time.
I remember it so well.
So who's the guy? I'm trying to remember the name of the guy who jumps.
It was a defensive lineman.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Merrill loses his mind.
That's what I was going to say.
Merrill loses his mind.
Oh, no.
They just gave the game away.
Yes, that was the game.
Do you think it was Vinnie Curry?
I don't. I don't think it was Vinny Carr. I feel like if you said the name, I would know. I'm going to look up the Eagles 2011 roster, see if I can figure it out. But that was that game.
Yeah.
And I was at that game, yeah. Jim in Swarthmore wants to talk about Kobe Bryant. Hey, Jim.
Well, actually, I'm in Key West today. And let me start this by saying I don't know if
you
either
win.
One of you, have you ever been to Key West? If you haven't, it needs to go on your bucket list. This is our 35th year of coming down here.
Wow. That's nice. I was there once.
Now, what I was calling about is, Glenn, did that gentleman on the Kobe, did he mention at all how Kobe got his name?
Yes, he did, actually. I'm reading the book. It's Mike Sielski's book about Kobe Bryant, and he does, but I'll let you tell the story about how he got the name.
It's my favorite restaurant. It was my favorite restaurant for years, the Kobe at the Valley Forge Hilton.
Yes.
And that's what his family.
There was a restaurant that Joe Bryant used to go to when he played for the Sixers, and I don't remember the name of it, but if you say that's it, I'll believe you.
Oh, it was the Kobe restaurant. Yeah, it was the Japanese restaurant there. That's how he got the name.
Yeah, his dad would order the Kobe beef and loved it, and like we had a kid and named him Kobe. Yeah.
that is in the book. Restaurant.
Yeah.
I really wasn't planning on calling because I did, but when I heard that thing, I have not spoke to you gentlemen since John Madden passed. And Ray, I wanted to get your, if you heard this and what your thought was. I remember, you know, Jack Tatum, he was notorious kind of like for spearing people out of bounds and just unnecessary penalties.
Yeah, he was a nasty player.
At the end of the half, it just happened, and Madden's walking off the field, and the reporter said, you know, I don't understand. How do you tolerate, Jack Tatum continually, doing these stupid penalties? I'll never forget Madden said, it's an acceptable cost of aggression.
That's good.
That's pretty good.
I got the guy.
Oh, who?
It's Jaquay Parker.
Oh, that's correct.
And the reason I remember is because he changed his name during his career, right?
Right.
He was something else, but that was the guy.
Okay.
And who also
had a history of doing dumb things.
Yes, which is why.
It was sort of in character. It was a little Derek Barnett-like. In Merle's tone, it was sort of like, and he does it again,
yes,
you know?
That was it. That was the game.
Jaquay Parker.
Yeah, it's at that game. 215-592-9494. Ray, I think we get back. We got to do this, and I don't know how many other shows do it. And I know everybody can do their show the way they want, but attention must be paid to the horribleness that is the Flyers.
Oh,
and we're the guys to do it. When we get back,
okay.
You got 4 minutes to kind of work it up within your system.
No, well, I kind of did it yesterday.
I know
I'm
going
to leave it for you today.
All right, I can do that. Ray and Glenn on 94 WIP.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
They all push and shove there again, trying to get the puck free, and finally do. Krebs got it around on the boards to Thompson. Steps away from his check. Did he ever? Back to the point it comes. On the wing on a blast, they score! Jeff Skinner gets another one. He took the one-timer, blew it home, and Buffalo has a 6-2 lead on the power play.
Mo, she know the name? Who's that broadcaster? What's his name?
Not sure.
He sounds like he's straight out of 1948, doesn't he? There you go. Okay, now they're on the power play. Anyway, it's clearly the Buffalo guy, as the Flyers got crushed yesterday by the Buffalo Sabres. The Sabres, who are 13-21, and they've lost 28 games and won 13. They had not won at home since Thanksgiving.
I know.
It's unbelievable, and the Flyers get stupid penalties, and the Flyers can't kill a penalty. Sabres go 3-for-4 on the power play. So the Flyers are now clearly out of it for any chance they would ever have of even making the playoffs, even sneaking into the last spot of the playoffs. They're 16 points out of the playoffs. Not 16 points out of first place, 16 points out of the playoffs. Claude Giroux afterwards says, we're all in this together. Yeah, okay, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like we hit rock bottom.
Well, yeah.
He says, we can't catch a break.
Oh, please.
Yeah, you make your own breaks, right?
Yeah.
Here, this is his quote. This is Giroux yesterday. I feel like we have to play a perfect game. Right now, we do one mistake, and we feel like it's going to go in the back of the net. And that's the mentality that they have, which is they're ready to lose.
Well, yeah, all you have to do is look at their record when the other team scores first.
You know, 218-1.
Yeah, the other team scores first, and they just say, okay, that's it. Yeah. You know, we lost.
Yep.
If they could score that, you know, they could be 1-0 2 minutes into the game, but the feeling on the bench is, okay, we're done. And it's just so numbing right now. And
yeah, but that's what I don't want it to be. See that, and I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's okay.
Here's the point I want to make about that. It's so numbing and so bad that I think most people have just turned away and said, I don't watch it, I don't care. And mm-hmm. And I want it to be, no, look at this. Watch this disaster. Keep your eyes on it. Think about why it's happening. This is my crusade. And I know you're with me on this crusade, which is they really stink for a reason, and they stink because the organization stinks.
Right.
You know, Mike Sielski talked earlier about how poorly they've drafted over 20 years.
Right.
And that's part of it. And I think another big part of it is this organization at the very top is more focused on, well, selling tickets, good luck. You're not doing that. But, you know, promoting, and I know I say this all the time, a mascot. There needs to be a sacrifice to this, and the sacrifice should be the man. They should burn the mascot. That's what they should do, right? Sacrifice Gritty to the gods. But I just, you know, my rant is with the top of the organization, Dan. It's not, I mean, Claude Giroux, I don't know what he's going to say, right? He's trying to say something without saying I don't know. But to me, it's like, don't look away. If you care about the Flyers, if you care about this sport, if you ever have, just keep on the pressure and the attention. So that's all I got.
Well, people are doing it to the extent that they're not going to the games anymore. I mean, if you see the home games, you see the attendance, you see that there's large swaths of empty seats there. And that's, you know, when you asked me yesterday, is this the bottom? And I said, yeah, I think it is. Because they went through some bad years before, and we've talked about the bad years before. And they had years where they missed the playoffs, but the fans didn't abandon them. You know, the Flyer fans, that core of Flyer fans stuck with them through that time. You know, and they had those bad years, but you went to the games are still sold out. Well, now that's not true. I mean, a large number of those people have just walked away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what you're talking about is, no, don't, if you're really a Flyer fan, don't do that. You know, don't just say, this is a train wreck and I'm done, I'm out. No, come back and make them accountable. Make them know that you're still there, you still care, and you want change. If you just walk away,
yes,
and just
exactly,
and if you just walk away and ignore it, then you may never get the change that you seek. But change is obviously necessary, and I agree with you. It's not just on the players, and it's not just on the coaches. It goes all the way up to the top.
And do you agree with me that they should sacrifice Gritty to the gods?
Well, what do you mean by that? I mean,
hold a
you're not going to
public burning.
Well, the suit, I mean, you're not going to burn the guy in the suit, are you?
No, I'm not going
to. Well, I didn't know how far you were going to go with this. I mean, I was starting to wonder.
Would it help?
I don't know. Let me think about that.
Okay. Don't rule it out. Frank in Bucks County is with us. Hello, Frank.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Good. I mean, I love your show. You guys are awesome. I actually had a NFL point, but I'd like to talk about the Flyers. And as you said, I just think they're beyond bad. Like, you don't even want to watch them anymore.
I know. That's kind of where I am. I mean, I really love the team. And I said, I've been with them from literally day one. And I love the sport of hockey. And I really like to – I want to watch it, but I can't watch it. I mean, I'll start to watch a game, and 10 minutes in, I'll say, what am I doing? And I'll turn it off. I hate being there, but they took me there.
I do, too. I was 10, 12, 13 in the 72 to 75 range.
Mm-hmm.
And it was everything we did. I mean, everybody played street hockey. Everybody – it was all Flyers, but – it's just gotten really ugly, and I thank you for that. Give me a second.
You got it, sure.
But we were talking about NFL scoring and whether it's defense or offense, and you know, I think it's been offense a lot longer than I respect your opinion, Ray and Glenn. I really respect your opinions, but I think it's been scoring since Dan Marino. You know, Dan Fouts, the Air Coryell, the greatest show on turf. Like, I think scoring's been the draw for NFL for at least 40 years.
Well, Frank, here, I'll tell you, I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you. My point was that's been the case for probably that long. I think that if you wanted to really sort of draw the line about, okay, here's where this started, I mean, it would be 1978 when they changed the rules. You know, they thought in the early 70s, the Steelers and that whole Steel Curtain era, the Steelers were winning games 10-3. And the feeling in the league, well, this is really boring. I mean, nobody's scoring anymore. And everybody's kind of building their defenses along that. The Orange Crush came along at the same time. The Oilers were really good defensively. The Cowboys, doomsday. And the scoring in the league went down. And I think the league said, we can't have this. And so they changed the rules in 1978 to open everything up. That's when they took away the bump and run. That's when they liberalized the offensive line play, where offensive linemen could extend their arms and basically hold. And the whole thing, every rule change they put in was geared towards creating more offense. So, yeah, I mean, this isn't – when I said what I said, it wasn't with the idea that this has only happened in the last couple of years. I mean, it goes back to 78.
Yeah. Yep. It's always been the emphasis.
Yeah.
It's always been the emphasis, right? The last team, I'm sure I'm going to be wrong with this, but the team I remember in the last 20 years that won more like because of their defense was the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
The year the Ravens beat the Giants in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Has there been since that time a team which, you know, their signature was we're just about defense?
Seattle.
Yeah.
Legion of Doom.
Yeah.
Those guys.
Yeah. Okay.
And Denver, even. The Denver team that won with Peyton Manning. When Peyton Manning was just a shadow of himself.
Yeah, it's funny.
The Von Miller team.
Right, Peyton was getting all the attention, but you're right, the defense was winning the games.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, you can do it. Phil in Delaware is with us. Good morning, Phil.
Hello?
Hey, you're up.
Hey, Glenn, Ray. Again, when else I listen to you guys. You guys are fantastic. You guys are two of the journalists on the radio that just... your great perspectives. I wanted to, call in and chime in.
Well, thank you.
I know you're from Buffalo originally. I went to school there. I went to the University of Buffalo.
There you go.
I spent 8 years after that. I had a kid when I got there, so I lived there for 12 years. So
nice.
I'm a little familiar with Bills Mafia. I was there when Jim Kelly and those guys were really, really good. So I'm rooting for those guys. My wife is a huge Bills fan. She's from there.
There you go.
So she's we have a dog in that fight per se. But I want to say one word I think about when it comes to Philly sports that I think goes to all four teams is frustration. The Phillies were almost good and frustrated at the end of the year. The Flyers are horrible. You know. Ben Simmons can't get out of town fast enough. That's frustrating, and I'm frustrated with the leadership in the Eagles. I mean, the reason why I say that is I don't trust that you know, the coaches are going to make the right decision. You know, they have 15 plays scripted every single game, and they're always wrong, always behind. And it's just frustrating. I mean, no matter what team it is, every single team in this area just frustrates the crap out of you. I want you guys to talk about that. I just wanted to chime in.
Okay.
I just want to say one last thing to you.
Yeah.
The Novas and Beef on Weck. Talk to you guys later.
Oh, man, I could go for Beef on Weck. That's a real Buffalo thing.
What is
Everybody thinks of the chicken wings, which, of course, is, the Buffalo thing.
The Anchor Bar.
Yeah, they were the first. And they're okay. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, Pat's and Gino's. If you're from out of town, you go to the Anchor Bar. If you're,
I did.
Yeah, no, and it's fine. But if you're from there, there's other places that, like, oh yeah,
it really is a dump.
Yeah, I know. Well,
I don't know why, but I was a little surprised. I thought I expected more.
Yeah, but the other Buffalo food item, which I can't get here, and I'm sure there's some places that make it around here. Anybody wants to reach out to me on social media at Real Glenn Macno on Twitter, I would love it, is Beef on Weck, which is a roast beef sandwich on a hard roll that's got seeds, caraway seeds, and hard salt, which is called a Kimmelweck roll, which you can't get here, I don't think. It's kind of like Nick's roast beef. That's the closest thing to it here.
Yeah.
But kind of different, and that's a real Buffalo thing.
Yeah, the Nick's roast beef is great roast beef, but it's not on a hard roll.
Right.
It's not on a hard bread. It's on the soft roll.
I could go. Actually, I've had one of those in a while. I haven't had one of those since the pandemic.
A Nick's roast beef?
Yeah.
Oh, they're good.
Oh, God, they're great.
Yeah. Do you like horseradish?
Oh, sure.
Oh, you do?
Okay. Oh, yeah, I put on horseradish. You?
Not really.
Yeah, I do.
No. I like it.
A little gravy?
Gravy and cheese.
Yeah. You get it on the outs, which is they give you like all the edge pieces, the burnt edge pieces.
I do like that.
Yeah. All right.
I do like that. I haven't been to Nick's in ages.
Right.
The original one, 20th and Jackson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to, again, pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Got to work on that.
Yeah.
All right. This has been fun. All right. Coming up.
Now I'm getting hungry.
I am now so jonesing a roast beef sandwich. It's so funny. It's like I'm not having one, but now it's like it's all I'm going to think about. All right, then. What are we doing coming up? Oh, we'll talk about some of the games coming up. And Ray, special guest coming up in the next segment, my dad. Speaking of Beef on Weck, my dad's had to share those.
I was just going to say, he's probably thinking the same thing we are right now.
I bet you right now, he's probably listening, and right now he's thinking like, yeah, I could go for one of those. Sorry, Dad, it's not on the menu tonight. Excuse me, Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack now on 94 WIP.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.